I like films. I like words. Words for me are a bit like food. Certain words fill me up. Other words I can do without, like porridge. No. Here, I'm going to move this so that you can see the screen, are some famous words.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
What General Vagon has called the Battle of France is over. The Battle of Britain is about to begin. Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire. The whole fury and might of the enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be freed, and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
Words are a vital part in the way that we communicate. They're not the only way that we communicate, but they are a vital part of it. And the Oxford Dictionary actually states that there are over 250,000 proper English words in current use. That doesn't take into account colloquialism, slang, or just made-up words like we do, or any other expression. So my topic today is words, but with a twist, of course. So the word in Greek is logos. It's an expression of thought. It's not just the name of an object, but also the personal word is the title of the Son of God. This identification can be substantiated by the statements of doctrine in John's Gospel. It declares, firstly, his distinct and superfinite personality. It also declares his relationship with God. As we'll see from the text, it says, with him. Not just company, but the most intimate type of communion. It talks of his deity, his creative power, his incarnation, the reality and totality of his human nature and glory. He was the Shekinah glory in open manifestation, the only begotten Son. I want to look at now at the reading 1 John. It's 1 John chapter 1, verse 1 to 5, and then on verse 14, but it should come up on the screen. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome. Verse 14 goes on to say, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth. We have beheld his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father. The other Greek word for word, if you like, is rhema, which is the spoken word. The significance of the rhema word is exemplified, if you like, in the command to take the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. It's a reference for an individual scripture that you may get, sometimes inspired by the Holy Spirit, and it brings us remembrance of things that we need in times of need. You know, like, I am the head, I'm not the tail, I'm above, I'm not beneath, no weapon formed against me will prosper. That sort of thing, that's a rhema word. It shows us the importance of knowing our Bible. We need to know that. Okay. I'm sorry Kirsty's not here this morning because I've got a bit of a sciencey bit now. I did tell you it was going to go a bit weirdy, didn't I? Okay, Matt. Okay, Matt. There we go. That is your brain. What an amazing piece of technology it is. If I move this out of the way, you can see it a bit better. Okay. Now, don't worry about the dictionary. I will try and talk you through some of the words. So it might sound a little bit technical, but this is you. This is your brain. This is created by God so that you can understand what you understand. Okay. Diagram of the brain. Everything that we touch, hear, see, smell, taste enters our brain through our nervous system, as it's interpreted by different areas of the brain, as you can see. There's different areas marked up there. Are you ready for this one? This is your first big word. Gustatory cortex. Sounds really good, doesn't it? Gustatory. Now, the sense of taste is conveyed via 3 of 12 cranial nerves. Cranial's to do with your head. The facial nerve carries taste sensations from the front two parts of the tongue. Now there's another big long word. You ready for this one? Glossopharyngeal. I'm so glad Kirsty's not here because I'm sure I'm not pronouncing them right. Glossopharyngeal nerve carries taste sensations from the rear part of your tongue. Now these cranial nerves provide information concerning the general texture of food as well as taste, like whether it's hot or whether it's peppery. Now, there are 5 specific tastes that are received by the gustatory receptors. They're salt, sweet, bitter, sour, and umni. I love that word, umni. It's actually Japanese and it means delicious. Sounds appropriate, doesn't it? Umni. So there we go. New word learnt today. It's umni. Everything is umni now. So your tongue tells your brain all of these things. Now, I don't know about you, but some people don't like certain textures. Some people don't like peas because of the hard and soft texture, yeah? Some people don't like tomatoes, the same sort of reason probably, or smell, and that sort of thing. So it's all this cranial nerve that does that. Now, here's your next big thing. Somata, sensory cortex. This is the second part. Now, the first one, the gustatory cortex. See where it's got primary sensory area down there, that long part that comes down to there? That's the gustatory. The somatic cortex is this secondary one in the center. Okay? So this is all connected. This is a very complex sensory nervous system. It comprises of essential processing centers. Sounds very much like a computer, doesn't it? It's amazing how God could just go, ching, done. But there you go. It has proprioception, mechanoception, touch, that's a touch one, thermoception, which is to do with temperature, nocoception, which is to do with pain. The sensory receptors cover your skin. They cover your skeletal muscles, bones, joints, all your internal organs, and your cardiovascular system. So we're not now just talking about taste. We're talking about how everything feels, how your body receives all of this information and what it does. So although tactile perception is considered one of the five traditional senses, the impression of touch is formed from different areas, as in pressure of skin, as if something is stretched, the vibration of something, the temperature of something. It all integrates sensory information to go to the primio-somata sensory cortex. This is the punchline, folks. To construct an understanding of the object or subject being heard, felt, read, or seen. In other words, that part of your brain dictates to you, or, informs you how you feel, how you sense everything. For example, Liz. Jaffa cakes. When you said 100, my imagination first went, 100 Jaffa cakes. I know about 100. Do you think, Liz, I could tempt you to actually come and eat a Jaffa cake? No, she won't stop at one. I'm just going to put one in there. Elizabeth, I don't want you to eat it first. I want you to smell it and tell me very as descriptively as you can what it smells and so on. Now touch it. Put it in your hand, feel it, and tell me what you feel.
It's rough and smooth. Slightly tacky for the heat. Definite texture, bubbly texture.
Now take a small bite. Small bite. And then then tell me what it tastes like. You can eat it all. Can anyone taste it? Can anyone sense that? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. Sorry. Do the same with that one then. Describe it, please. Hold it.
Okay. Now the smell's definitely changed. There is a smell. Can smell the banana. Again, very sweet. Texture is quite slippery.
What's it making you think of? Places? Holiday?
Oh, ice cream sundaes. Yeah, with chocolate sauce and ice cream and squirty cream. Yeah, and a few walnuts across the top.
Any memories?
Actually, it reminds me of childhood, that classic pudding, bananas and custard. Yeah, classic banana pudding, yeah. Oh, and banana and jam with the coconut on the top. Sorry, you set me off now. Yeah. Oh, the Chinese, they deep fry it,
batter,
don't they?
Yeah,
then they put that beautiful sweet sugar syrup on it. Yeah.
Can you have a nibble of that?
Not very nice. Again, very sweet, rich texture.
Do you want to take the Jaffa cakes back with you?
No.
You'll eat the banana?
I'll eat the banana.
Okay, thank you.
I might have to finish that one off, though.
Can you see me okay over here? Or would you prefer I was in the middle? Okay. Right. The way that we use words can transport a person from standing here to a tropical paradise eating a banana sundae. It's what these memories bring back. That's what's in your gustatory and sotomata. Sounds like sotomata, doesn't it? Cortex. That's what your part of the brain does. Okay? Words mean everything. We started to understand now perhaps the importance of the words that we use. The film clips that we've seen. Thank you, Matt. You can take that away now. Thank you. Put people off their dinner a bit, really. The film clips that we've seen were of famous speeches. They inspired and motivated people to move on in their quest, to go on and to achieve, to reach for that dream, to never give up and to never give in. Churchill's wartime speeches still motivate and encourage people. Do you know that was only 90 seconds, that one from Churchill? But it's still at the end when he goes, "But if we succeed, this will be our finest hour." And it does, it still sends those tingles, yeah? Martin Luther King's speech, the "I Have a Dream" speech, was a pivotal point in the Civil Wars movement. No, I don't mean Civil Wars movement. Yeah, Civil Rights movement. In America. It was televised across America, and there were white people, colored people, different people all together. And with that repetition of, "I have a dream, I have a dream," people turned. It turned the tide of a lot of things. Doctor Who, well, David Tennant was the best Doctor Who ever. So, yeah, I just had to throw that one in because it's a cracker. And I'd follow him anywhere anyway. Sorry, Mark. Scarlett O'Hara's determination to never give up. Ace picture, one of my favourites anyway. And even Marlon Brando's speech at the end. That's actually from Superman. But it has the Christian message there. We have a capacity for good, and we want to be good. So he sent his son to live amongst us. Jesus. And of course, Arnie. Who could resist Arnie with the "I'll be back"? Sometimes you think it should be something at the end of the Bible, didn't it? Jesus saying, "I'll be back," you know. Or how about some other words that mean such things to us, like "all clear," "you are precious to me," "it's a boy," or as we've done with communion today, "you're forgiven," "you are blessed." "Lo, I am with you always to the close of the age." "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Our amazing brain enables us to feel, to interact and to react and to totally engage with words. Does anyone remember when they were at school, they had a range of books called Ladybird books? Yeah, you remember that? Janet and John? Or Peter and Jane. Down in London, we had Janet and John. Up here at the north, you had Peter and Jane. I'm not quite sure why you had Peter and Jane. Perhaps they thought we were a bit common down south, you know, and we had to have Janet and John. But we did. Now, these were one of the first books that were written to help children to read and write. And they were designed using a system of key phrases, key word phrases. And this was devised by a guy called William Murray. Now, he was an educational advisor. And he did a lot of research in the 50s, and he realized out of all the things that words that we have, there were only 12 words account for one quarter of the vocabulary normally used in speaking, reading, and writing the English language. 100 words account for only half, and 300 words for only three quarters. So the first book that he wrote, or that he compiled, had 12 key words. And they were used repeatedly. And if you've ever seen a Janet, if you can remember your Janet and John books and all that sort of stuff, it was "Peter can jump," "I can jump," "Jane can jump," "we can jump." And it was repeated and repeated. "Here is Jane," "here is John," "Jane is here," "here is," and so on. It was rabbit, literally repeated on rote. But children, when they could see "it," "I," "an," they would go through a sentence and pick out the words that they knew. And that's the building of learning, because as they got into another part, they would put in another word like "jump," with a picture of somebody jumping. They would recognise that, and that would go into the vocabulary, into the memory. Now, that series of books was first published in 1964, and it only ran for 3 years. Believe it or not, it was only 3 years. And the whole series was completed in 1967. But over 80 million books in that series were sold worldwide, and it actually remained in print exactly more or less as it was when it was first written up until 2012. Those few words made a whole total difference to a ton of children. And actually, those 12 words are still on the Early Years Foundation Stage Guidance for Learning Outcomes, and we still use them for our toddlers. Those 12 words, you'll love it. Are you ready? A, and, he, I, in, is, it, of, that, the, to, was. That's it. That's all it is. But you put in something else into there, like jump, or their own name. If somebody says your name, you hear it out of a crowd, don't you? So that's the recognition of your own name. I am Leslie. I can read, I can write. Sentences there. Now then, the Bible, Matthew. Thank you. The Bible is compiled of 66 books, 39 Old, 27 New Testament, written in approximately 40 different authors, written over a period of 1,600 years, written over 40 generations, written on three continents, that's Europe, Asia, and Africa, written in different locations, in the wilderness, in a dungeon, in a palace, in a prison, in exile, and at home, written by men from all types of different occupations, and women, of course. Sorry. Kings, peasants, doctors, fishermen, tax collectors, scholars, translated from different languages, from Greek, Aramaic, Hebrew, then into Latin, and then into Anglo-Saxon language, and then into English by Wycliffe in 1380, and eventually the King James in 1611, the New King James Version now, and the Revised International Version, and so it goes on. The word has not changed, and is still as powerful now as it was then. Jesus is the Word made flesh, and that has not changed. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. God's timing is perfect. Why did Jesus come when he did? So that his word could be heard and read and understood 40 generations later. It means that the same to those being saved now as it did then. Because God created us with an amazing brain that could understand or sense the written and spoken word. It could absorb it and literally taste and feel that the Lord is good. He used language that was not only relevant for the day, as it was then, but also used parables that even now we can interpret and understand, because we now live under grace and we have forgiveness and it feels good. So words are very important. Choose them wisely. That's my book. Have some words that were written some 200 years or so ago. Quite recent, really, I suppose, in the whole realm of things, as we're talking about 1,600 years ago. See if you can remember them. Amazing grace. How sweet that sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. That's over 200 years old, but the words are the same. The feeling is the same. Your gustatory and somatic cortex are interpreting them the same. As a Christian, he reached that extra part of you, that knowing of Christ in you. It reaches that part. And perhaps there is another part I can read, just show to you. Are You always lose these pages when you want them the most. This was written by another man of, just born in the 1700s, so recent. Love divine, all loves excelling, joy of heaven to earth come down. Fix in us thy humble dwelling, all thy faithful mercies crown. Jesus, thou art all compassion, pure unbounded love thou art. Visit us in thy salvation, enter every trembling heart. Or one of my favorites. Oh, for 1,000 tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise. Words are so important. Use them wisely. Use them well, because they plant something in your heart and in your mind that you will remember all of your life. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. And you will find rest for your soul, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. We feel it, we understand it, we taste it, and we make it personal to ourselves. May God bless you and keep you and look after you and be gracious to you. Take it as a personal thing. It's to you and you alone. Thank you.